This land is your land. This land is mine. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Good evening, everyone. This is Basma Firehack on the People Speak Radio Show, along with our board operator, Don, working in the background. Please feel free to join us on Pal Talk by going to www.paltalk.com and downloading and installing the software and creating a nickname. That way you can come to our virtual auditorium and interact not only with the guests but with other friends in the auditorium. You can also listen to us on the show by going to bbsradio.com and clicking on any of the icons at the top left or right. We have an incredible guest this evening. Her name is Professor Wangari Maathai. She's the first ever African woman to receive the Nobel Peace Prize. She received the prize in the year 2004. And we'll be back to talk with her right after these announcements.
This land.
Join us every Tuesday
from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern
on The People Speak with host Basma Farhat
as she interviews guests from the realms of politics,
activism,
spirituality,
literature,
science,
and other social issues.
The People Speak provides a forum
for live audience interaction,
allowing you to speak with guests
and for them to hear and answer you.
This land was made for you and me.
Hello, everybody. We're back. This is Basma Farhat, again on Pal Talk and BBS Radio. Our guest tonight is a fascinating and incredible woman. Her name is Professor Wangari Maathai. She's a woman that has promoted women's rights, survived jail, beatings, death threats. She's helped to topple a tyrant and save Kenya's forests and to bring countless hope to countless women and children. In the year 2004, she won the Nobel Peace Prize for her organization of the grassroots movement that developed into a worldwide movement called Green Belt Movement and has mobilized more than 100,000 women to plant over 30 million trees across Kenya. It's a movement that's taken root across Africa and continues to spread. If I'm not mistaken, the goal for this year is to plant something like 80 billion trees. Right now, some of the other accomplishments, Professor, and welcome to the People Speak. Here on the People Speak, whenever the people speak, we make a difference.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Well, we are very honored to have you. And as I said, we do have a virtual audience that's listening with great anticipation, plus our radio listening audience. Professor Maathai is listed as the United Nations Environment Program Global 500 Hall of Fame. She was named one of 100 heroines of the world. In June 1997, Professor Maathai was elected by Earth Times as one of the 100 people in the world to have made a difference in the environmental arena. In 2005, she was named by Time Magazine as one of the 100 most influential people in the world and by Forbes Magazine as one of the 100 most powerful women in the world. This is just among some of her many, many credits. Professor Maathai, can you talk to us about what your initiating force was for the Green Belt Movement? What an incredible project. And how did you even stumble across something like that, or was this something that you had been thinking about?
Now, that's the amazing thing about this idea, is that when I started, I was not starting a movement. I was actually responding to women in the National Council of Women of Kenya, which is an umbrella organization, and we were preparing to go to Mexico in 1975 for the very first UN conference on women, and we were discussing our agendas as women of Kenya, and I was there to represent the Kenya Association of University Women, but amongst us were women from the countryside, And they started describing the conditions and the concerns that they have. And I quickly connected that their need for energy, which was mostly firewood, their need for good, nutritious food, which would curb malnutrition, especially among children, and their need for clean drinking water was largely connected to environment. And because I grew up in this same area, I knew that when I was a child, the environment was very good and very pristine. So I started seeing that something very serious was happening to the environment, and I suggested to the women that we could plant trees. So it started as a small project that was intended to last only a few years.
And it has outlasted even probably your greatest expectations.
Absolutely.
How amazing. How amazing.
Yeah.
Let me ask you something. I find it fascinating to understand. As I was reading about the project itself and how it came to fruition, if I'm not mistaken, there were certain policies that the government held that actually aided in the deforestation of the Kenyan area. How can a country that obviously has an incredible foothold in the environmental aspects, how can that be allowed? How can a government get away with like completely stripping bare a land and knowing that they are bringing about their own demise?
Well, that eventually was the crux of the matter, because what we eventually discovered as we innocently planted the trees is that there were policies that actually facilitated the destruction of the environment and policies that were not being implemented. Now, one of the policies is that the government is free to go into an indigenous forest, clear-cut the forest, and replace the indigenous forest with exotic plantations, a monoculture of pines or eucalyptus. But we very quickly learned that that was partly why our rivers were drying up and our streams were drying up and the country was drying up and crop failure was rampant. So we started connecting that. Now, there is nothing that the government can, of course, do it, but you also need a government that has a concern and that can make the linkages, because although we needed the pines and the eucalyptus for building, for paper industry, for the furniture industry, we also needed the environment. We needed water. We needed food. So sometimes it was deliberate. Sometimes it just seemed like it was complete lack of understanding.
So you're saying that it wasn't necessarily a complete stripping of the environment. What they were doing was replanting non-indigenous plants that were actually a contributing factor to the destruction of the area?
Precisely. But in some cases, they're clear-cutting and replacing the areas with crops such as tea, for example. Was not good for the environment because it facilitates soil erosion. So you needed, again, it is okay to plant tea, and tea can improve your gross national product. But it's also important to realize that when you grow tea, you're growing tea on very steep slopes. So you need to protect the soil so that you do not have your beautiful, fertile topsoil disappearing into the rivers and finally into the oceans. Because in the final analysis, you'll have people who cannot grow crops and feed themselves.
Professor Wangari, how important is your educational process in not only educating the environmentalists or the people in the government, but the people in the communities about some of these things that, of course, are reaping a benefit from tea crops and the like?
The education was extremely important, and in fact, we discovered very quickly after 1975 that it was important for people to understand how they are governed, and it was important for people to understand where their system of governance either supports their livelihoods or facilitates destruction of their livelihoods. And that education is extremely empowering. Because if, for example, you live in a city and you have an open free space with green vegetation, green trees, and somebody comes and says, I have the money, I want to develop this plot. You have to be able to say, or you have to have the information to be able to resist that and say that, no, every city needs green, open space. You need to breathe clean air. And you can only do that if you have trees that clean your air. And also, you should be able to say, I need cars that do not emit gases that pollute the air I breathe. Now, this information sometimes, of course, is in the hands of the government or hands of organizations or corporations. And it is very important that this information is given to the public, because otherwise the public does not put pressure on the government or the corporations.
Professor Wangari, let me ask you something. How widespread has the Greenbelt Project become throughout the world? And then we're going to try to change and shift this topic to the connection of the Nobel Peace Prize. Most people would assume that you would have won some kind of an environmental prize and are questioning what is the connection between implementation of a grassroots program that helps the environment and peace in a world that's in a world today that's literally facing world war.
Yeah, well, one, I would like to encourage people to read the book, my memoirs, which I have just released, Unbound. And there they will see that although we started planting trees, the tree was for us a symbol of hope, a symbol of the doable, a symbol of peace. And a tree was for us an entry point into communities so that we would be able to unravel the linkage between good management of resources and good governance and the capacity to preempt conflict. And the Nobel Peace Prize, in giving the prize in the year 2004, was emphasizing that in order for us to live in peace with each other, we need to manage our resources responsibly and accountably, and we need to share those resources more equitably. You cannot have a world where a few people have a lot of wealth and a large number of people have dehumanizing poverty. Therefore, it is important to have justice, to have equity, to have social justice, and you can only have that if you govern yourself in a democratic space where you allow the rule of law to take place, where you allow respect for human rights, you allow for the voices of the minority as well as for the majority, and you allow for the diversity to express itself, because that's the heritage of the human species. Now, this linkage of the three themes, or the three pillars, as I call them, is what our work is about, and that's what the Norwegian Nobel Committee recognized. But because many people think of us as tree planters, they usually don't know the other aspect, or they do not know how holistic our approach is. And I would like to encourage people to visit our website, greenbeltmovement.org.
We are putting that in our virtual auditorium as well. We are putting all your sites in there. Well, that's fascinating, and obviously, it almost reminds me, and isn't this interesting, earlier when you had said that it behooves a government to address these issues, and yet, when I know here in the United States, I know in Africa, even during the days of the apartheid, and I know in many parts of the Middle East right now, I think this is this balance of power that's being played out. And a lot of people are seeing this as the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer.
Absolutely.
How do you feel about any of these connections? And can these projects start to infiltrate other areas and help turn back the hands of a clock that some people believe are leading us into world war?
Well, we need to rethink our concept of security and peace. We need to expand that definition. That's exactly what the Norwegian...
How do we do that?
Well, you do that by recognizing that you have to, you cannot be mighty and therefore right, that you have to give justice to other people, and that justice is due to the minority as well as to the majority. When you look at many of the wars that we are fighting, whether it is a conflict within our neighborhoods or a conflict within our nations, sometimes we have conflicts within our tribes in Kenya, or a conflict such as we are observing in Darfur. Many of these conflicts are actually over resources. People are trying to access resources. They want to control those resources. The question is, who will control, who will access, who will share? And as long as some people feel that they are being marginalized, that they are being mistreated, that they are not being listened to, that they are not sharing in those resources, sooner or later they will come and they will seek justice. And when they seek justice, that's when we see conflict that often escalate into war. And so the expansion of the concept of peace is to realize that we need to think together consciously and deliberately the issue of good management of resources, governance, and our capacity to preempt. And justice is very, very important. In fact, this year, you remember that the prize was given to Yunus, Mohamed Yunus.
Yes,
and
we were just speaking about
very warmly commend Mohamed, our brother and comrade. And what Mohamed has been doing in Southeast Asia is to, again, use the economic model to promote and to demonstrate how important it is to have economic justice, because poverty in the world is as a result of injustices of the economic system that we have created. And therefore, it is not surprising that we are constantly trying to put out fires.
Well, that's, you know, here in the United States, obviously, I'm sure you know that we're facing another election. And it is, in most Americans' viewpoint, probably one of the most critical elections that's come our way in decades. We are concerned, and one of the things that you are talking about is exactly that. You know, here we are in our area, in the United States, watching our manufacturing companies, watching our resources and going to other countries. And here in America, we are starting to see the effects of poverty, of lack of employment. Immigration has now become critical because we believe that our jobs are being taken from us. And I can see exactly what you're saying. It's the trees of human beings that we're facing and struggling with here, because it is the fact that people are no longer secure in what their environment is providing them. And I believe that our governors have a direct responsibility and burden of responsibility. What I find to be just amazing is that the women of your country, of Kenya, and the many countries that have been involved in this project of planting trees, got out into the field. And as your son said, I think in one, he said it was... when I was little, I don't think I ever understood what Mom did, Mutta, that was his son. And he said, I was more interested in what she would bring to us from her travels. But when I started working with the Greenbelt Movement and got my hands dirty, that's when it all made sense. Once you begin to care, it never ends. You're always asking, what can I do to fix the problem? You're made uncomfortable by the fact that someone else is suffering. I think that is just such a powerful statement. And your women, these women, went out and they got their hands dirty and they planted the trees, and they have planted millions of trees. And here, in many parts of westernized society, we're not even being asked to plant trees. All we're being asked to do is plant votes or plant empowerment or plant something, and we're not doing that in many cases. Why is that? And how? What are your suggestions for planting trees in a metaphoric sense in other areas of the world?
Yeah, I think that it goes back to that education. When you look at a place like this where you are bombarded with a lot of information, the information that you are bombarded with is often not information to educate you on the linkage of the three issues that I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually bombardment on how you can consume more, bombardment on why you should feel inadequate because you don't have this and you don't have that and you don't have that, and therefore feeling bad because you don't have the second job and the third job so that you can consume more. And unfortunately, we need to change that, or I should say, that is the situation that should be changed. We really need to inform our people. In this country, in America, because you have democracy, but for the war in Iraq, you have, and of course the recent attacks, this country where I spent some of my most wonderful years during college, it's a safe haven. It's a wonderful country. That's why people are crossing the borders to come here and enjoy the dream that everybody believes is in America. And so a lot of issues are taken for granted. That's why even to vote here, you have to encourage people to go to vote because they take it for granted. They are not. They don't feel threatened by the fact that governance, if it is not taken care of, can undo all the other benefits that people have. It is very, very important to have the right people to govern us, because when we put them in those positions of power, they make decisions on our behalf, and they can make the wrong decisions on our behalf. And therefore, it is very important to have the right people there. So participating in governance is extremely important, and I wish, especially at a time like this, people would really get out there and vote, because if you don't vote, then you have no business complaining afterwards.
Well, I agree. I have a lot of issues surrounding the vote. Obviously, you know that we've had a lot of discrepancy around our voting system in the last elections, and many Americans are very disenfranchised with what they're seeing here, but I agree that absolutely getting out there and being involved. Tonight's prize, we have a prize giveaway, Professor.
Uh-huh.
Tonight's prize giveaway is a copy of Professor Wangari Maathai's autobiography titled Unbowed. To participate in this, you must be in our virtual radio auditorium. I'm sorry, BBS listeners, but that's the way it works, so get on Pal Talk. The people speak here in the social issues category. If you want to join us for future prizes, just download Pal Talk at www.paltalk.com. Tonight, the third person to respond in text with the correct answer will win the book Unbowed by Wangari Maathai. I hope everybody's ready, because I'm going to give the question, and then right after that, we'll be going on break while the admins in the room determine the winner, and they will notify you as to how to collect your prize. And here goes. The question is, what African country is Wangari Maathai from? And that's the third one to answer the question. And after we come back, of course, too, the other thing that we'll be encouraging you to do is to call in and with phone questions. You can speak to Professor Wangari right online here, and we're going to be taking a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Got questions? The library's got answers, and books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
Did you know that President Bush's No Child Left Behind Act mandates that public high schools turn over private student information to military recruiters or risk losing federal funding? Not only that, but the Pentagon has compiled a database of over 30 million young people up to age 17 for the purpose of military recruitment. You can protect your child from unwanted military recruiting by removing their names off both these lists. Go to www.leavemychildalone.org.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The People Speak. This is Basma Farhat, your host this evening with Professor Wangari Maathai, Nobel Peace Prize laureate and the founder of the Green Belt Movement to save the Kenyan environment, and it's spreading across Africa unbelievably. You can ask questions of our guest by calling the U.S. number toll-free, 877-876-5227, or worldwide toll-free is 888-810-8322. Once again, the phone numbers are USA 877-876-85227. And the worldwide toll-free number is 888-810-8322. Now, let's see if we have a prize winner here. Do we have a prize winner in the audience for the book Unbound? Mike, have we got a winner in the audience here? Are you guys going to work with me, or are you going to keep me hanging? Well, I guess they're either haven't determined who the winner is, or they're still working on getting it into the text. We'll go on. Welcome back, Professor Wangari.
Thank you very much.
Professor, you know, here we, and obviously the welfare of the environment, as you have suggested, the fact that people can sustain themselves in a way of food, nurturing their environment, being able to supply even the basic components such as firewood in Kenya, which is a vital thing.
Right.
Here you have done all of this, and you continue to work as a peace activist of almost 20 years now. I know sometimes the events of what happens and what plays out before us are very disturbing. And we wonder sometimes how much of an impact, how do you keep going? And this is a question that I ask many of our guests here, because the majority of them are active in the issues of peace. And this is one of the reasons we started the People Speak radio program.
Yes.
How does a peace person continue to try to make peace in light of war?
Well, again, the understanding that we are being encouraged to embrace is this expansion of peace, because most of us, when we think of peace, we want to hear that everybody is at peace, nobody is fighting each other. But this is the first time, actually, that the Norwegian Nobel Committee brought all these movements together, the movement of peace, the environmental movement, the women movement, the human rights movement. All these movements were brought together, and we were encouraged to accept or to change our mindset and understand that we can only achieve peace if we embrace all of these movements and all of these issues and approach development holistically. They use that word holistic. Now, that's the word we were using often in our work, but that was the first time that the committee used that word holistic. And therefore, whether we are in the peace movement or in the women movement or in the environmental movement or in the human rights movement, we need to understand that we are all working towards creating a world where we can live in peace with each other. And that in the final analysis, that peace will be recognized when we have embraced each other, when we have learned to listen to each other, when we have learned to dialogue with each other, and when we have learned that might is not right. We say that, but to implement that, that is easier said than done, because where you have so many people who feel marginalized in the world, how can you have peace? You can preach peace all day, but if you have people who do not have a job,
necessities.
Yeah, there will be no peace. And even when we are not, even if we are not in the forefront, imagine many of us when we live in cities like I live in Nairobi, and I have to reinforce my doors, I have to reinforce my windows, I have to be careful if I travel by night because I will be mugged. I will be, my house will be burglared because I have people out there. 60% of our people who are living on less than $1 a day in a country where we have millionaires. It is not possible. We may not, we say, of course, that we are in peace. But am I really in peace when I'm sleeping in a house which is burglared or which is reinforced so that I keep the poor out of my house?
I absolutely understand completely, 100%. As a Palestinian American in the United States, currently Palestinians are living on $2 a day. The human rights violations against the state of Israel are second to South Africa, only second to South Africa.
Mm.
And so I think we have a similar history as far as a call of suffering. And we're looking at the people, but I have to tell you, I would behoove all people to look at your past and to see how you have produced something so amazing. You have energized people, you have energized environments, you have energized committees and governments through something, you know, people would sit there and say, that's just so silly. How can a tree... planting a tree, do this. And again, in one of the statements that I had read about you, you said something like, on this tree will come insects, birds, and squirrels. It will become a home. It will improve our homes. Trees take the carbon dioxide we breathe out, embrace it, and turn it into oxygen and energy. Without trees, we would die off. I just find that to be so profound and yet so simple.
Yes.
Why can't human beings see the simplicity of peace?
Well, you know, most of the things that that are profound, that make changes, are not complicated. They are very simple. And I guess that's why we miss them. One of the issues that is extremely important here, and I know it is important to many people in the world, is clean drinking water. The women,
yeah,
were saying we need clean drinking water. I am sure millions of people all over the world can resound that statement with those women. Clean drinking water. And we know that if we do not take care of our environment, and especially if we do not take care of the global warming, we will definitely be fighting fiercer wars in the future, because we can live without oil, but we cannot live without water.
Right.
And the worst thing is when we feel like there is absolutely nothing we can do. And if there is anything that the book Unbound should encourage us to do, is to empower ourselves and liberate ourselves from the feeling that we can do nothing. One of the beauty about the tree is that you don't require a lot of money, you don't require a lot of technology, you don't require too much to plant a tree. Just dig a hole, get a tree, water it, and before you know it, it begins to grow. Actually, I want to share with you that I recently learned, I was in Japan and I was attending an expo an expedition that was focusing on nature's wisdom, and I learned that every one of us needs 10 trees per year to take care of the carbon dioxide that we breathe out. You just mentioned about the cleaning of the air.
A year?
And I think, yeah, 10 trees per year. And I think that anybody who is listening to us here should make sure that they can point to 10 trees they know are taking care of their carbon dioxide. And if you don't have that, get out and at least plant a tree. You'll be amazed how much you empower yourself when you liberate yourself to do something as simple as planting a tree.
Well, you heard it, guys. Each one of you need to plant at least 10 trees in your environment and know those trees and know that they are being cared for and nurtured.
Right.
That's how, and I think, isn't that a yearly thing? So you got to do it every year.
Absolutely.
And I'm not kidding you. This is the woman that you don't want to mess with when it comes to tree planting. We're talking millions and millions of trees here.
Absolutely. We need to do that. And even people who have seen the former Vice President Gore's film, The Inconvenient Truth, have seen that we are really threatened with global warming, especially with the melting of the snow. And can you imagine what could happen if the ice at the polar regions melted and our seas overflew, or we had floods along the coast? How many people who live at the coastline would be affected, and how much fresh water would be affected, would be polluted by seawater, and therefore millions of people would be left without clean drinking water at the coast. These are issues that, when you look at that film, you can see that you're not talking about theory, you're talking about things that are happening. And one of the activities that we can really engage in is plant trees and change our lifestyle, especially with respect to how much we drive, how much we burn fossil fuels, and that's a very serious issue, especially here in North America.
Let me ask you something, Professor.
Yes.
One of the things that I find probably the most saddening and the most amazing that I still cannot seem to embrace fully is the denial that human beings are under. Is it really their fault that they are in that much denial about global warming? Or is this something that you feel that we are miseducated or undereducated on?
Well, if the global warming was an issue that was very simple, I guess everybody would see. Unfortunately, it's not such a simple thing. And generally, environmental degradation is not always a very simple thing because it's a process that takes place slowly. And usually the generation that destroys the environment is not the generation that pays the price. Is a future generation that will pay the price. But in my own country, I can verify, I haven't been to the poles, you know, to the polar cup, so I can't say much about that, except what I see from what the scientists write. But in my own situation, Mount Kilimanjaro 100 years ago was covered with a huge mass of glaciers, ice, and snow. So was Mount Kenya. Today, we have small patches. Is this global warming? Maybe. Is this because of deforestation? Maybe. Whatever it is, we cannot do without water that we get from this mountain. So whatever it is that is causing that ice to melt, we have to stop. And if we suspect that it is the greenhouse gases that we are pumping into the biosphere, then we need to do something about it because we can't afford to live without that fresh water that comes from the mountains wherever we are.
Well, you know, that's such an amazing and profound statement. Many times we get so locked up in trying to assess it, trying to analyze it, trying to figure out which politician is telling us the truth and which environmentalist is telling us the lie and who profits from this. And the truth is, what's happening here is that we have, it doesn't matter. Something's going wrong. Things are melting that weren't melting before. And whatever it is, we must address it and stop trying to label it or define it completely. I mean, we can leave that up to the environmentalists, but we just have to call it a problem
and start addressing the problem. We have our first caller, Professor Wangari.
Yes.
Caller, can you give us your name, where you're calling from, and a brief question for Professor Wangari?
Yes, my name is Saeed, and I'm originally from Morocco, and I have a wonderful question for Ms. Matai.
Yes.
Yes, my question is, first of all, I'd like to congratulate you on being the first African woman who has been the shining armor for all of us in Africa.
Thank you.
My question is about the phenomena of desertification, and also how do you compromise if you want planting 30 million trees and at the same time global warming is looming ahead. What is the compromise here, and what kind of work is being done, you know, in this respect? Thank you very much.
Well, should I answer?
Yes, please.
Yeah,
do.
I was going to say that thank you very much, Saeed, for your compliments. And since you are from Morocco, which is within Africa, you know that we have the misfortune of having that huge Sahara Desert in the north.
Yes.
And the Kalahari Desert in the south. And so we are extremely vulnerable in Africa. And that is why people are saying that even long before the industrialized countries experienced the impact of global warming, it is the people of Africa and the people who live within the tropics who will first pay the price. And some people think we are already beginning to do that because of the prolonged drought and the drying up of the land and the failure of the rains and the failure of crops. And therefore, we in the African region have no choice but to really invest in what we can do. We have the masses of people. So if governments were to really be serious, we could plant a lot of trees, if for nothing else, to stop the spread of the desert and to stop the loss of the soil, because we need the soil. The other thing is we need to protect the trees that are standing. And one of the major forests that we have is the Congo forest ecosystem. And I know that within the African Union and also within the sub-region, governments are very keen to protect this forest. But we need a strong civil society.
Yeah.
And I am looking for partners to help me mobilize the African civil society.
Yeah, well, I know that this really has taken a lot of awareness as far as the Western countries. How much awareness is there as far as Africa? And I know that it's really very hard to really get the message to everybody because, you know, we understand that we are part of the land, but at the same time, as far as preservation, is really, really very hard to get that message to all of us who live there.
Well, one way is to organize, and I want to share with you that the African Union has requested me to create an organ in Africa, which we are calling ECOSOC, for lack of a better word. But it is essentially a forum for African civil society, because I believe very strongly that if we could have an African, strong African civil society, we can mobilize our people and we can help our governments, because our governments have the will. We are lucky now. I think that the African leadership at the moment is very positive. They want to do the right thing, but they need their people to be mobilized and to be engaged in what they can do. And planting trees is one thing that anybody can do. Protecting the forests that are standing, the trees that are standing, is something that everybody can do. But in doing that, we also need friends, especially from developing countries, because you know that many of the companies that come to do the logging of trees in these forests are not actually local African people. These are international companies that come to log, and they need to understand that these forests are important not only for Africa, but also for the world.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for answering my questions. Please keep up the good work, and we are definitely 100% behind you. We'd like to see very much a green Africa in the next few years. If it is not going to happen for us, hopefully it'll happen for our children and grandchildren. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Saeed. We do have a winner this evening. For everybody's information, in our Pal Talk audience, the winner of the book Unbowed by Professor Wangari Maathai is Dennis Jimenez.
he's our number one fan, Professor. Dennis has been with our program ever since we started our show, and he's our staunchest supporter.
That's
Dennis,
great.
Congratulations. One of the things, you know, we were just finishing talking about, I have to say this because your words, and I'm really dying to read the book now because as I read some of your statements, it's like so amazing. You called forth in the Congo Basin one of the world's lungs.
Yes.
God, that is like so profound when you hear it that way. It puts the intent of a human element to our earth, a
Absolutely.
Living, breathing entity. And I want everybody to understand and repeat after Professor Wangari, 10 trees will go a long way. Professor, we have another caller on the line.
Okay.
Caller, can you give us your name and a brief question?
Hello,
for Professor Wangari.
Hello, my name is Mike from California. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, Dr. Wangari.
Thank you.
Has your movement spread to South America where they have the deforestation of the rainforest? And also, are you in contact with any other Nobel Prize laureates like Nelson Mandela or Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and are they supporting your efforts? Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Mike. We have not gone to South Africa, but we have gone to countries like Haiti, which are in great need of reforestation. And as you know, they went through a very difficult period when the governance issues were completely ignored and the environment was completely destroyed. So we have some very wonderful Haitians who are working with us, and we are hoping that we can really start the movement there. But we are in touch with organizations that are also doing environmental work in South America, and we are very happy to share information. In fact, we have in the Green Belt Movement a program we call Green Belt Network, which incorporates organizations that do the same kind of work so as to share experiences with them. With respect to working with other Nobel laureates, in fact, you may be interested to know that the women Nobel laureates, who are very few, recently formed a network, the Nobel Women Network, and we try to work together. We are spread all over the continent, and we try to work together, especially on areas of human rights issues. And I have been in touch with President Mandela and Desmond Tutu. These are the laureates, some of the laureates in Africa. As you know, Mandela doesn't travel very much these days, but he's such an icon in Africa, and it has been a wonderful experience to work with his foundation, the Mandela Foundation. So, yes, indeed, we are working together with other laureates. You may also know that recently we were in South Korea with the other laureates, such as the former vice president of Korea and the former president of the Soviet Union, Gorbachev, and other laureates. And the main thing was to rally around the former vice president, the former president of South Korea, in his efforts to persuade North Korea to abandon their nuclear programs. So, yes, we do come together and we try to rally around issues that are a concern to the areas where we are.
May I ask you a question about that,
yes.
Professor Wangari?
Yes.
You are currently in the midst and in the mix of some of the greatest leaders, peace activists, laureates, environmentalists in the world.
Yes.
What are they saying about what's happening? What is the general consensus? To say that they are just concerned would be an understatement, I would think.
Yes.
And as they are concerned, are they speaking of any solutions to the situation?
As you can well imagine, Nobel laureates have the moral authority. They are ambassadors of peace. They are chosen because of the work that they are involved in. Their greatest contribution is really to persuade because they don't have an army, they can't stop a war, but at least they have a moral authority that they can persuade. And most people know that they don't have an agenda, they're not trying to take over, they're not trying to benefit themselves. So coming together as laureates, they can persuade and appeal, and that's where their strength is.
Well, I will pray for them to be able to persuade on a very deep level and a very wide scale level, because I know a lot of people are very, very concerned these days with the situation at hand. We have one more question that we'll be taking from our audience, because we're getting close to the end of the program. Our audience member, a caller, what's your name and where are you calling from, and your question to Professor Wangari.
Hello, Professor Wangari. My name is Ellie, and I'm calling from Portland, Oregon. I have admired your work for a long time, and I have many friends in and from Africa. My question to you is about AIDS, and I'd like to know what your position is, and have you spoken to President Mbeki and the whole controversy over the West's imposing pharmaceuticals and such on Africa? And I'd just like to know what your position is on AIDS. Thank you.
I would like to call on, encourage you to visit our website, greenbeltmovement.org, and you will see there a statement that I put up, and that tells you a lot about what my stand is at the moment. I know that everybody in Africa is truly concerned about AIDS because we have lost so many people, and we now have literally millions of children who are orphans. And so it has been very difficult. And many African governments, of course, did not have the money to even make the medicine available. And in that connection, I want to pay tribute to people like Bill Gates, President Clinton, and others who have made drugs available. Just this last June, our president announced in Kenya that people living with HIV/AIDS can go to government offices and get medicine free of charge. And that is largely due to the efforts that are being made by these people, including people like Bono and Geldof and many others who are very concerned. For us, especially as members of parliament, each one of us is charged with the responsibility of trying to give information, encourage people to get tested so that they know their status and so that they can protect themselves and protect their partners, and especially now that having AIDS is not a death warrant within the next few months, people can still survive if they take the medicine and if they eat well. So in my constituency, I actually have a program where I bring in people living with AIDS. They get instructions, they get comforted, and they get counseling so that we can reduce the infection rate and also give comfort to those who are living with the virus.
Well, yes, you know, I sometimes there are shows that I just really hate to wrap up, and I'm afraid this is going to be the last question that we can take. I want to thank you, Professor Wangari, not only for being with us tonight. It has been one of the greatest honors to have you here.
Thank you so
much. But for the work that you're doing in the world is just so profound, and the effect that you have on the lives of the women that you touch, the lives of the environment, the lives of the people that are seeking heroes and heroines in our world today, you are among one of the greatest. I am very proud to have had you with us this evening.
Well, thank you very, very much. It's great to speak to all of you, and it's a great privilege. I just hope that you go out and... if I had the time, I would tell you about the story of a hummingbird, but just do your best wherever you go, and don't ever give up.
Never give up. Do what you can do. Thank you very much, everyone, for being here. Our guest next week is going to be Chevy Chase, comedian and actor. We're looking forward to having Chevy here, and I just want to thank the Pal Talk audience. I want to thank our listeners in BBS Radio, our board director, Don, my co-host, John, who was not with us this evening. And I guess that's it, folks. Always remember, when the people speak, we make a difference. So get out there, plant a tree, do something, do anything, do what you can, and make a difference. Thank you very much for being with us tonight, and we'll see you next week, everyone.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of the fast, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and